Welcome to the Shanty Sound Podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Byrne, and to celebrate the 10-year anniversary of Shanty Sound, I've started my very own podcast exploring one of my favourite topics, the healing power of music and sound. I'm a lifelong musician, and I've also been working extensively with sound therapy and sound healing for many years now. And I'm guessing that perhaps like me, you're here because you're also interested in all things to do with healing music and sound. Over the last 10 years, both through travelling and the internet, I've met some pretty awesome people, and I'm excited to get to know them even better through these interviews. I'm really interested in people and what draws them to begin sharing music and sound in a healing or therapeutic way, and in learning more about the healing and uplifting effects of immersing in sound and music. So if you do enjoy this podcast, I would love you to hit the subscribe button on whichever app you're listening on, and do feel free to leave a review or a comment. And you can also check out the show notes from this and every episode at shantysound.com.au/podcast. My guest on today's episode is Jayaji. Jayaji is a modern day contemplative, mystic, and multidisciplinary spiritual guide. He is the author of several publications and has received over 200 healing hymns and medicine songs, more than 500 pieces of poetry, and taught more than 30 yoga teacher trainings at 200 and advanced 300 hour level. He's the founder of Sound Ceremony, Floresta Atitlan, and co-owner of The Yoga Forest. He's an eternal student of mystic doctrines, an adept and devoted yogin, and a meditation instructor, and a certified minister, amongst other things. Jaya's main teaching comes through his words and his music, where he acts as an instrument for the spirit of wisdom. Coming to us from Guatemala, where he currently resides with his wife and children, this is a great chat which gets a little bit deep and mystical. We talk about his journey into the world of healing music and sound, exploring deep listening, receptivity to sound, and much more. Welcome to Shanty Sound. Here is Jayaji. Jaya, it's so amazing to have you here with me on the podcast today. Thanks so much for being here. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Yeah, thanks for inviting me. It's really good to see you.
You too. Yeah, it's amazing. So you're in Guatemala.
I'm in Guatemala, yeah, in a beautiful little indigenous town, rural Guatemala, a place called San Marcos in Lago Atitlan. And it's a beautiful, great big lake surrounded by some large volcanoes. It's a very special place high in the mountains. So, yeah,
wow. That's where I am. How gorgeous. And you're there with your wife and your children?
Mm-hmm, my two boys. Yeah, we've got a big life for us here. Life's just unfolded here, and here it is. Everything we have is here, and our work, our life, our children are born here in the house. Pretty much everything we do operates out of our life here. So it's the family.
That's so amazing and beautiful. And how long have you been there now?
Well, 2021. I first came here nearly 9 years ago. Yeah. And then I left. I was warned that if I would come here, I'd probably not leave. I didn't think anything of it. But I came, and then I got stuck, and then I left. I eventually made it back home to Australia. And then I came back nearly 2 years later, and it's been basically a permanent base since then. More than 6 years, for sure.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it's been about 10 years since I've seen you here in South Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, because I'm really interested in getting to know all of the wonderful people that I'm interviewing. So, okay, I saw you here 10 years ago in SA. Are you originally from here? And I'd love to know a little bit about your family life as a child, because you told me that your dad is a rock musician and famous pianist. And your mom sounds really interesting too. And I just think it sounds really interesting to delve into, you know, your background.
Yeah. Yeah, it can go in many ways. I'm not from South Australia. I was actually just there for about 12 months, Michelle. I grew up on the Gold Coast, but I was born in New South Wales. My father, yeah, he's a well-known rock and roll musician, like old style rock and roll. There's videos of him playing the piano and singing when music videos were a very new thing on the television. It was black and white. He's in his mid-70s now, so we're going back many, many years. And when I was young, we got to travel, you know, while he was on tour, mostly in South Africa. He had a big fan base, a big following. He's still doing that. He's still playing piano. He's still singing. But my mother and him separated when I was very young. So I had the music there, but I was the youngest. So I had it less impressed upon me than my older sisters. So I found music much later in life. But somehow it was kind of always already there, if you know what I mean. And coming into my approach to music is very different than his approach, because you know, he has stories where he'd be whipped over the fingers for playing wrong notes when he'd be practicing scales or classical pieces on the piano, etc. So very classical training. He went to the conservatorium for music. And I came at it in a completely different angle. From meditation, from prayer, from ceremony, from ritual, and kind of coming out of the music rather than into the music. And so I really appreciate that difference, because it's important to me. And I think that's where my mother comes in, because she was kind of going through a spiritual breakthrough when I was born. And that had a huge influence on me. You know, for example, the story goes that my mother, she had a good friend who was a psychic, and when I was just a little boy, the psychic, she worked for the Sydney police force and all that sort of stuff. I think I get the story right. I'll have to ask them to correct me if I'm wrong. But she said, "This is not your boy. This is not your son. This is your spiritual teacher." And so the funny thing that I have, the conundrum, is I've never known if I do the things that I do now, Michelle, as a spiritual teacher, for lack of a better word, because that psychic was right, or because my mother spoke to me as an equal and asked me for advice and sought my counsel and you know, appreciated the wisdom that I had from a very young age. That's a very special gift to give to a child. And so that had a huge impact on me as well. So there's the musical inheritance from my father, and the spiritual opening like a flower from my mother. And in a nutshell, that's... yeah, opening to what you're asking.
It's like those two worlds collided in you, from what I see in you. What age did you start becoming interested in music or sound?
I was so shy. Yeah, I don't know why. I didn't speak so much. I was very quiet. I was very introverted. I was very self-conscious about myself as a teenager and as an adolescent. And I didn't get into music until my early 20s, really. I was way too afraid to do anything, because my friends, they could do anything, you know. So I was better off just watching and listening. But I was always listening and I was always watching. And so when I grew enough courage to get into that, it's like something opened that never stopped opening. And I feel really grateful for that, because I have a lot of friends who were trained as children, the great musicians, but they don't really play anymore. They lost the play. They lost the inspiration. And for me, coming to it later in life, it really sparked something that is really alive in me. And I'm really grateful for that the way that happened. The biggest thing, the story that I have was from one of my first mantra, like chanting events. I would have been like 22 maybe. And it was Yeah, I'd been getting into some mantra and some chanting circles, and then there was just this one, and it was with Kevin James. I think you know Kevin. And, you know, it's this cliche moment. Everybody's singing, and the young self inside of me realized that nobody could hear me, and I could be as loud as I want, and I could really sing and do what everybody else was doing. And so I started to do that, and it was a really intense, like, there was, the bhav was there. There was a lot of energy in the room, and lifting and lifting. And inside of me, there was this great big black dark ball of stomach, and it started coming up, and it started coming up. And I was, like, trembling to the point where I was going to collapse and have a big emotional release, this type of thing. But I did as any good young boy would do, and as it got to my throat, I did. I swallowed and I pushed it right back down. Yeah. And I was like, phew. I just, you know, dodged a big bullet. Like, what would have happened if I had started crying in front of all these people? Like, what a mess. I couldn't let that happen. And then there was another voice that said, well, wait a second. What was that big black thing inside of you? And why did you not have enough courage to let it out, yeah, for yourself or in front of people, in front of anybody, just whatever that is? And after that moment, I needed to get it out. And so I went to try to move that ball of energy. And I knew that singing was such a key. I knew that sound was such a key. I basically never went home. I moved to India, or I went to Adelaide. I was there for a year. Then I got a one-way ticket to India, and I really haven't been home since. Another funny thing about that, you ask, you know, when I came into sound was, I started getting into sound healing after this, and years later I went home to my mother's house, and she had all of these relics in the house. Like, for example, the fruit bowl that was around since before I was born, it was a hand-beaten bowl from the Himalayas. You know, she had Chilean rain sticks just as ornaments in the corner of the house, and gongs from North India and bells from Africa. All of these things, these sound pieces that were never used there, that were just there as pieces of art. So I went home and I picked them all up and I started doing sound baths with them.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's awesome.
But they were all, it was always there as I was a child, which is really fascinating to me that, you know, I feel that the spirit of the instruments contain and hold a very special vibration.
Mm.
So somehow, some way, that was there. Yeah.
Mm.
So I'm lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds like you had an alignment with that path. Sounds like a destined alignment that you are walking the path you're walking. Do you remember a point where you were able to really let go of that black thing, as you called it, or that energy? Was there a point in time that happened that you can share?
Well, for sure, there's several occurrences, and to me, that energy and that thing, it becomes the teacher. You know, if you really let it, whatever the darkness is inside of us, it can really direct us to the light. And it's like the hero's journey in all of these old parables and ways of looking at the world. So I don't want to deny it or say that I got rid of it. Mm. Rather, it kind of became it reared its head and it became something else, and something to guide me, because ultimately I could be grateful for it because it spurred something so much greater. But the biggest moment for me, again, I was it was probably just a few months after that. I was really getting into the work, you know, and so I was going headfirst into that, because for so many years I had not, and I had been a bystander in my life, sort of thing. And so I really wanted to shake and wake myself up. And another Australian friend who was a big influence to me in those early years is Chrissy Charlie. You know Chrissy?
Yeah.
So she was just a powerhouse, and I haven't spoken to her in a little while. Back then she was doing these really epic one-day workshops and these three-day workshops. And to me, she was a really huge influence, because she doesn't do so much of the sound work anymore, as far as I know. Mm. But back then, she was doing the sound work, but It was just with the voice,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I always share this with my students because we have a lot of instruments here. And I say, you know, these are all wonderful things, but you don't need them to, you know, to be powerful, to really break through this thing, or to be healing, or to be therapeutic, or to move something, to make sound transformational. And so there's just this one really great piece of work, this exercise that she does, and a friend of ours in Bali says it's like an ecstatic exorcism. And so that was through the voice, and that really changed things and showed me the profound power that the voice has, not just in moving things and transforming things, moving energy, but in that it knows everything about us. You know, it's heard all of our tears, it's heard all of our laughter, it's heard all of our lies, it's heard all of our love sayings and offerings. And so in that place, the voice can become really naked and raw. And when we follow our voice and look at our voice and start to speak with our voice, or dig deeper into the voice, or sing with the voice, all of these things start to come to the surface, and we start to see, you know, a more raw picture of what's underneath the covers of our psyche. And that's just a priceless, priceless thing.
Mm. So true. I usually at the end of sound baths get people to just chant a few ohms, and for some people that might be the first time they've ever used their voice like that in a group. And I always say, you know, all of the exactly what you just said, all these instruments that are here, you know, they're amazing and they can bring wonderful feelings and healing, and but the most powerful instrument is our voice, and especially each person's voice, I feel it's tuned exactly for our own frequency.
Yeah, it's like an imprint of information and DNA that is completely unique. It's like it's like a fingerprint.
I'm so interested in all of the amazing things that you're offering, and I'd love to just, I'm wondering about your sound ceremony course. So is that something that you work with people? With the voice, or is it about the instruments? What do you share? What do people learn from you?
Yeah, so this course is like it's our baby. It's a 14-day course, and really it was it had been in the making for such a long time, you know, this congestion, or what do you call it, the birthing process, the 9 months in the womb. It started around the time when I met you and another Australian sound healer I was going to see in Byron Bay, a wonderful Israeli guy, Avishai Barnatan.
Yeah.
And I loved it so much, and I would take my mother, and my mother would come. And one day I just asked him, you know, we don't know each other. This was so many years ago. I was just a young guy back then. I said, where can I go to learn this? How do I do this? Where can I study? I want to practice.
Yeah.
And he gave me the best advice. I don't know if he would remember saying anything like this back then, but he said, you know, this is a very new arena. It's a new industry, and we're kind of just making it up as we go along. The whole sound bath and sound shower. And little did he know that that was a great piece of advice, because it gave me the freedom to go out and figure it out. And I went to as many teachers in the field as I could, and studied and read books and made it on my own. Primarily, I did many things, but after India, I started working for several yoga schools, and I was a yoga teacher trainer. But my specialty was meditation and Eastern philosophy and psychology. That was where my real passion was. And I taught many, many yoga teacher trainings, 300 hours and 200 hours all around the world. Got to travel a lot. And I just did so many that it kind of burnt me out. But from that space and from that knowledge of doing and facilitating so much, teaching so much, being in front of people more than half of the year, you know, 6 trainings a year, 30-day trainings, like I had very little life. So very comfortable speaking, very comfortable talking, very comfortable teaching. And I really wanted to carve that out into the way that I wanted to put the sound healing course, that I saw that there was a niche that wasn't really being filled or fulfilled. Now there's a lot of courses out there, and it's really wonderful to see. But I created this course as a need to fill a niche that wasn't being met. And there's many courses out there, and they're all unique in their own ways. And I often contemplate the sound healing courses and standardization and like the diverse nature of what's essential to be in there, because I come from a background of wanting to create a high standard for students in adult education.
Mm.
And so our course, it's a bit of everything. Yeah, we have the yogic methodological foundation, which means we're just borrowing things from the Eastern philosophy, and that's mantra yoga, bhakti yoga, yoga of devotion, nad yoga, this yoga of deep listening and contemplation. And then the other specialty is the link with our work in the Americas, in South America, and a lot of the training that we've been doing here over the past 10 years. And so that's the, for lack of a better word, again, shamanic school of thought, or mestizo or indigenous kind of aspects, and learning how to bring new respect and appreciation. And a big passion for me is kind of the ethnomusicological approach in seeing what differs, especially when it comes to entheogenic using tribes and the particular strands of music. So we share a lot of things in the course. It has a big focus on the voice. My wife, she does the whole voice medicine piece inside of that. And we do a lot of singing, a lot of circle singing, learning about harmonies. We have some basic music lessons, learning about about scales and the chords, but not so much in that way. Each day is mapped alternating from sound and from song. So we're always singing. We have a big songbook. We have several songbooks. Our biggest songbook has like 700 songs in it. So we've never at a loss for what to sing. Oh, and wow. On the sound days, we're in the studio with the instruments. The first week we're receiving sound baths. And then the second week the students are learning to give one-on-one sessions and also co-collaborating in group sessions and offering that.
That sounds incredible.
Yeah, but the heart of it really, and I think the unique aspect for us always, and just the part of the feedback that we're always receiving is the ceremonial quality, the ritual aspect, and the care and love and devotion that goes into those types of things, like the places in between. What I really love and I say with confidence whenever we begin a course is that a lot of people, they think they come to get a certificate, but they realize very quickly that there's so much more there for them as an individual and as a human being for their life. And I truly believe that these experiences are something that those individuals will never let go of. It will be a part of their life forever. They'll never forget what they did there with us.
Mm, absolutely.
Mm.
And do you guys offer yoga teacher training as well?
Yes, we're not teaching. Okay. We come in as specialists if it's needed. The school which we continue to work for, my wife is one of the founders, is the Kula Collective. They do teacher trainings all around the world. The home location is at our retreat center here in Guatemala called the Yoga Forest.
Mm.
And we have a really, really great network of facilitators coming from many different backgrounds. And so what I like about it is truly a collective. There's seven founders and they all come from different backgrounds. And so for them to decide on a new topic or put something ahead in the business, everybody has to decide on it. And sometimes it takes them days to decide on something. And what I like about that is I've been a part of a lot of top-down schools and businesses, and you're kind of just listening to the boss and whatever they say. So here I know that there's a lot of integrity because there's a lot of chefs in the kitchen, you know, trying to do what is right. And that means that there's also a diverse outlook on the different styles and approaches of yoga with a lot of respect. And so I really appreciate what the school has become and where it is today. So I don't teach yoga teacher trainings anymore, mm-hmm. Mostly because of having the kids.
Yeah.
We our time is delegated very differently now.
Yeah.
But I do love to do specialty topics, usually yoga sutras or Upanishads or some studying the classics or teaching meditation.
Wow. And you and your wife, Hayley, have beautiful music that you make together under the name Jaya Saraswati. I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, it's been a while. We're very hands-on and in-person kind of people. So we're always doing things, we're always in front of people. And it's been a big intention of mine to get into the studio more so that we can actually put something out into the world for the people who are not presently here with us. So that's an ongoing project. We're hopefully going to get in the studio over the next couple of months. But we did record an album like 4 or 5 years ago. We recorded it in Peru with another friend who is also Australian in his home studio. All the connections, they come back around. Mm. That was one thing that we managed to get out right before our first child was born. And then since then, it's a lot of the deeper creative projects, they take a backseat.
Yeah.
And now I'm really excited because this year we're hoping to get into the studio more and start bringing out some things because it's way overdue and we've grown so much as musicians together and our songs and our craft, and we have so many songs. We've got literally, I have 10 albums lined up if I can find the time, and that's why I've just built a studio here.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, that's amazing.
It's exciting. But yeah, that first album's on Spotify. You can check it out.
Yeah. Awesome. And I was also going to ask about the training, the sound ceremony 100 hours. Is that available online or is it only an in-person thing?
Well, yeah, since the global situation, we put a lot of things online and we learned to do a lot of that. We learned how to navigate there because it's something that we are very good at avoiding, doing the online things, keeping up with appearances and social media. And thankfully, we don't have to because people come to us and they know how to find us. So that's really wonderful.
Yeah.
We did put the 100-hour module online and it turned out to be a completely different thing.
Okay.
It's a similar thing. It's the same thing. It's the same flow of events. But there's several things that we don't really get around to. And there's several things that we go a lot deeper into simply because we have more time in the course to lay out the theory, whereas in the in-person course it's a lot more experiential and hands-on and not a lot of time to really go into all of the theoretical parts of the topic. So people get a lot out of both, and we have many people who have done both. Mm-hmm. Actually had people who have come to do the in-person course more than once, several people. So but yes, it is available online. And we have people from all around the world. We've done 3 online courses, and that's a six-week course. That was a lot of fun. Our next one's in December, I believe. We slowed down on that.
That's awesome that, people can access. That's been the awesome thing about the weird last year or so. Lots of cool things that we'd never be able to access, we now can because people's things are online. So that's really good.
Yeah, and just to say something about that, Michelle, just when things came online, I felt, how are we ever going to create such a ceremony and ritual and connection with people through a screen and through Zoom and online like this? And I was very humbled and surprised that we could do that. And people did walk away transformed or moved or emotionally touched by the service and the ritual or the sound and the teaching itself. And it just goes to show me that, this connection, it doesn't have to be face-to-face or physically in person. And that connection goes beyond time and space. And that's a really wonderful thing that this last year has definitely brought us. It's brought me. It's brought me a lot of hope in that sense.
That's nice. That's a good sentiment. I'm also really interested to know about the music, songs, and poetry that come through you. I get the feeling that you might suggest that you are more of a vessel, a receiver of these songs and poems than the creator.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting thing and something that I guess a lot of people might not view the same way. And so the perspective for me, the experience for me is really the idea of a channel or an instrument. I really like an instrument. In Brazil, they say your aparelho is your body and mind, and you prepare your instrument for the music. I like to say that to a musician, everything is an instrument. including themselves.
Mm. Right?
And so if we can get into that place, like they say in India, to become hollow like Krishna's flute, so that God can play, God's breath can play through you. And that's just something that it's been happening, I don't know, for a long time. My mother was involved in a lot of kind of spiritist things, channeling circles and things like this when I was a kid. So mediumship was not so far from me. And later in life, I found myself a part of some circles that involve a lot of those things. And I really found like they were my people. They could understand that language a little more. In the Western world, we say it's the spirit of the bard and the poet, you know.
Mm.
But to me, it's like a tap that is hard to turn off, whereas the majority of people, they're trying to turn it on everywhere. They're looking for their creativity. But to me, creativity is something that we cannot not do. And it's something I cannot not do. And when I'm not doing it, I don't feel right. So when I get into those trance states and those cycles, the formations come. And if I'm in the right rhythms, the right rituals, they will come in such an orderly form, and I rarely have to change that. When I was less musical, it would be just a lot of poetry, a lot of pieces of poetry. Some days when it would hit, I could write like 15, 20 beautiful little poems. I call them poems, but to me they're just little teachings, and it's the most precious thing to me. It's some of the most precious things where I feel like if I don't get it out, it would be such a shame that I died with it inside. And so when these little jewels and these gems come to me, I think they're just wonders, they're gems. And so then as I really refined my instrument and my craft more, nowadays it's less the devotional poetry and more the music, more the hymn. And so some of the traditions that I'm a part of, this is what they say. They say that it is that these pieces, these teachings, these hymns, or these medicine songs, even the mantras, they are received and they come through the person but not of the person. And when that happens, then that piece of music, that song, that poem is now there for everybody. It's everybody's to relish in, to learn, to recite, to sing, to praise. You know, we can generate quite a collection of them. I've got, you know, nearly 200 hymns that I've received, and I'm just trying to catch up with myself, trying to keep up with it as it's coming. And so there's quite an art, and I'm lucky enough to have found a lot of elders and good people around me who have the same affliction. You know, it's a blessing and it's a curse because it's always there. But it's a very sweet thing. And so I'm happy to have some people around so I can really start to refine and guide it and make sure that it's not just an egotistical thing, not just a selfish thing, but really to be pure in where that's coming from. And so, we use those in certain times and in certain places, in certain ceremonies. And we have a song for everything.
Writing these, or are they coming through in English, or are there other languages?
For me, it started for sure in English, and now occasionally there'll be one in Spanish, but I do a lot in Portuguese simply because that's part of one of the traditions which is really close to my heart right now. It's like a vibration, you know. The English is beautiful and it touches my heart so much because it speaks to what's the language that I speak. But then there's something deeper where it's springing from. And so I sometimes have help to, you know, the ideas there, the writings there, and then to translate that and refine it a bit more. When I do it in English, sometimes it doesn't need to be changed. But in Portuguese, I need some help to make sure that it sits well. But sometimes it's just... my brain starts to sing in different languages, which is really nice inside of my head. Where it's mixed, I'm not thinking, is this English or is this Portuguese? It's just kind of there. The idea is there, and then it's my job to order it in the best way that it can be organized without altering it too much.
What a task. Yeah. Do you use guitar to write? the melodies?
It goes both ways. Sometimes, no, I don't use the guitar. I used to try to figure those things out when you try to write some songs and things like this. But now, if I have a melody or a song, then it's just immediately there in the guitar. And sometimes it's in different keys, major, minor. Sometimes it's like sevenths and ninths and different progressions. But it's kind of, it stays to a certain form, which is quite easy to navigate. But what surprises me is that it's not always just the same sort of thing. Sometimes the mood, the temperament, the texture is quite different oftentimes. And as a reflection and a way to digest what we're talking about is, I feel the same way about any teaching. And when I look to scriptures of the world, there's a place where I can say it contains truth. The truth is there, and truth is true. It's a vibration. It's a presence. And when I look at the scriptures of the world, or from India, or from Tibet, etc., I am moved by those teachings. And the teaching is not to get caught up with the teacher, but look at the teachings. And so for me, the realization is that these beautiful things, these beautiful teachings that come into the world like flowers, we confuse them. They seem to come from people, but the teaching says, don't look at the person, look at where they got it from. And there's this place, in the astral, it's inspiration. Being inspired, and when that comes, I like to say the teaching is the teaching. The teaching is the teacher, or the teacher is the teaching, and that means that it means just that. Huh? Looking at where these things come from, and kind of putting ourselves aside, and I believe this is a bigger arching idea of the human being. There's an idea that we have the earth, we have the heavens, and the human being is kind of like an antenna in between the two to receive and transmit between them both, to be a communicator, to be an instrument, to be a vessel, to be a channel.
Oh, that's a lovely contemplation. I love thinking about that and just imagining being that whilst singing or playing, making sound as an antenna between heaven and earth. Yeah, wow.
Yeah. Well, you would know for sure, like in your concerts or your sun baths, isn't it so much more touching, connected, magnificent, or there's like wonder and awe or mystery in the room when you're not there, when something else takes over.
Yeah.
It's this very flow state that many are trying to look for, and many take psychedelics for, or many drink alcohol, or many get addicted or get into abuse. It can be negative things, can be positive things, but it's that moment of true connection where we're not there, but we are aware, and it's a beautiful state.
Yeah, that's really great. Thanks for highlighting that. I love just feeling into that. It's nice. It's nice even just to think about, let alone actually being in it.
Yeah.
I think for myself, it's easy to just kind of put my mind into that space. Because I guess, I know how it feels, and I know that you do too.
Mm.
I really feel that sound is for everyone. Mm-hmm. And what would you say to someone who doesn't really know much about this? Like, if they've never really had the experience of what it feels like to be deeply connected through sound.
That sentiment, just as you said, that sound is for everyone, and there has so many layers to it. This sound, there's no words to confuse it, no languages to say which side of the street it's on, so it doesn't have borders, its edges are undefined. So anybody from any walk of life or belief system can come and receive sound, and that's a really important thing to transmit. And the other thing that I like to share is that if we can't share about it simply, then we miss a whole lot of people. If it is for everybody, then we need to really speak about it simply. Because in a lot of the communities where I live and the places where I work, there can be a kind of secret language that people use in the quote-unquote spiritual world, where a lot of people can get lost. And so it's a really good question. When people come who have nothing, no idea about this sort of thing, to a sound bath, for example, I could do a demonstration. I say it, if nothing else, we can feel it just like a vibrational massage. And training people also just to listen as well is a really important and impactful thing. Like you say, you share people to give people the space to make an om at the end of the class. And that could be the first time they've really done that, really put their finger on that. And giving people an opportunity just to stop, pause, and listen to what is present can really change their state. Yeah. So one of the entry points for me is through deep listening. And that sound is something that's hard to switch off from, because we live in a world of sound. It's always sounding around us. And so when we listen, we have an open state of awareness. And we can close our eyes and we can listen to one sound. We can listen and receive many sounds. And that act of receptivity, it puts us in a meditative state or a more expansive state. Because it is open, it is allowing, it is accepting. And so I try to invite people to a state of meditation through the ears rather than the eyes or through the mind.
I definitely resonate with that. I think that when we have that presence with sound, it's like it brings us into the here and now. And if we really are truly listening to the sounds that are going on in the room, whatever they are, might just be the sound of a clock ticking or your breath, whatever. Maybe it's a singing bowl. But if we're present with that sound, we can't be in any worry about the future or past.
Yeah, this is the meditation training as well. For example, in insight training or Vipassana mindfulness training from the Buddhist schools, when we are practicing mindfulness, we are training the mind into the present moment. And so training the mind into sensation, feeling sensation. This is a wonderful thing about sound, is that we think it is something that happens at the ears. And I give people a demonstration, and I might hit a bowl or play an instrument and get them to see that they also feel the sound in their whole body. So sound is not just auditory, it's also felt, it's also kinesthetic, it's a sensation in the body. When we feel present sensations, the sensations and the sounds, they only happen in the present moment, like you say. And this is a real deep street that I like to go down in my teaching, in my contemplation, is that this is an avenue into meditation. A lot of people, they have a hard time trying to concentrate or sit on a cushion or something like this. But just coming to the ears, you come to an open state, a receptive state, and that is tuning you like an instrument to the present moment. And every sound, as you hear it, it's already gone. Before you listen to it, you can't hold it. It slips right through your hands. So it also teaches us about impermanence and teaches us to hold things lightly.
Yeah. Gosh, that was deep.
Well, just to go a stage deeper.
All right. Yes. Take us.
I share sometimes in the beginning that with deep listening. So I have some bowls here. I'm just going to.
Oh, yeah.
And so we listen to the sound from where it starts, its middle, its journey, all the way to the end. And so with the deep listening comes deep presence. And with this deep presence. There is only presence that is listening. And so that's the stage deeper, a little under. It's this state in Zen Buddhism of no mind. And with no mind, there is no body. There's no one there. And there is just the sound. And it goes even deeper that the sound I just played here, and you're hearing it over there. You're in the future. It's already tomorrow where you are. It's daytime there. It's nighttime here. But the sound there, it happened here in this room, and we heard it. But really, the sound was actually just happening inside of our brain. You know, this is where the information is being received. And this is what I like to share people, especially in sound baths, is that one of the reasons sound is a medicine, or is it is healing. We take it like a medicine. It works from the inside out. We think it happens from the outside in, but really everything we do here is happening from the inside out. And so the sound is inside. Huh? The sound is inside. All of those sounds, all that music that you've heard, it's all inside of you. It's all happened inside of you. And so when we keep that inside and when we let it move us, it can really move us. And that's the medicine.
Wow, I'm completely like in such a Zen state right now. Just from contemplating this, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, this is my fun.
Oh, gee, it's great. Wow, Jaya, thank you.
Yeah, well, you get it. That's why it's fun. Yeah. But I think everybody can get it.
Just
trying to get lost along the way. Yeah, it's with fun.
I'd love to suggest to people listening to just rewind about 2.5 minutes or maybe 5 minutes, however long that last little chat was going, and listen with your eyes closed. Just listen to Jaya from the singing bowl onwards. That was really amazing. I loved it. Hey, there was something else I was hoping that you'd share with us. A poem, one of your poems.
Sure. I don't read many poems out loud anymore. It's something that I'm finding the time to get back into because I started releasing books and then they came to a halt because I couldn't keep up with the production.
Oh, wow.
Editing. Now I have more time or have more help with people who want to help me in the editing process and those types of things. So there's some more inspiration there to get out, but I have a lot of things that are unreleased on my computers like a jungle. But today I'll just read you an old one. This is from several years ago, and it's one that people really often enjoy. And so this is called When Love Comes Knocking. When love comes knocking on your door, why on earth or in heaven or anywhere below or above these places would you hesitate? And when love comes knocking on your door, do not fumble. Do not wonder why or question what this means for your coming plans or business delegations, your wild nights of youth or cravings for quick fixes. When love comes to your door, do not ask who it is or fix your hair. Do not paint your face or tidy the house. Do not even put the kettle on. And when love comes to your door, do not jump in the cupboard or climb under the floorboards. Do not pretend you are too busy to see her or pass her off to your secretary for an appropriate future appointment. When love comes to your door, do not turn off the lights and sit in the dark. Do not light candles and pray, wishing for things to remain the same. And when love comes to your door and shows you a fire, do not water the perimeter or run for the hills. When love comes to your door, do not prevent her from entering or burning down your walls. Do not even wonder why. You had moved out and built a door with a house and placed love outside of it in the first place. When love comes to your door, open it and see. You are not exiting your home. You are entering into it.
Oh, thank you.
I've got all the dogs barking in the background.
I know. It's giving me all this imagery of where you might be there in rural Guatemala. Sounds so interesting and amazing.
It's very alive with sound, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, that's so amazing. I know that you've got so much to offer, and people listening can go check out the show notes and access all of your info. But just for someone listening on the fly, can you just tell us the best spots to check out all of your amazing offerings and keep in touch with you?
Yeah, for now, everything is on sound-ceremony.com. And there's our courses and some of the retreats we do throughout the year. And from there, you'll be able to find your way to the Yoga Forest and see what's on offer there. We're here in Guatemala most of the year. We also travel to Peru a couple of times each year. I go to Spain this year and back and forth to the United States and Mexico. And I like to say, if you want to find out more or find out where we are, you can. And if you don't, you won't, and that's okay.
Gosh, yeah, it's been really amazing catching up and hearing your wisdom and your wonderful words. I feel very peaceful after speaking with you.
Yeah, me too. It's really good, Michelle. I really enjoy catching up, and I really enjoy the questions. Thank you so much.
That's my pleasure.
Looking forward to hearing more of the podcast, and hopefully we'll be in Australia if the borders open up in 2022. So we'll see what that brings. But I'd love to be back home one day. So
yeah, cool. Come back and visit South Australia one time. Yeah,
it's been on my list ever since I left.
Awesome. Well, all the best to you and Hayley and your beautiful boys. And I'll be following you on social media. We're seeing what you're getting up to. And yeah, I really look forward to seeing what you release when you get these recordings up and happening too. Exciting.
All in good time.
Yeah, that's right. Perfect timing.
Yeah. Well, many blessings to you and to James as well. And yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Jaya.
You've been listening to the Shanti Sound podcast. You can access all of the show notes at shantisound.com.au/podcast. I would love you to subscribe, like, comment, or leave a review wherever you're listening. And connect with me on Instagram at shanti_sound and Facebook at Shanti Sound Australia. The music and sounds featured in the intro and outro are excerpts from the Shanti Sound Soundbath CD, recorded and produced by Michelle and James Byrne. You can download this and other music by Michelle and James Byrne at shantisound.com.au/music. Remember, sound brings healing and presence. The truest and sweetest sound comes from within. So hum, sing and create sound whenever you can. Thanks for listening. I look forward to sharing with you again soon.